Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Shoot, here's the deal. I had thought of some kind of sweet opening that implied that we were part of some sort of international intrigue to go with Wayne Stewart's book, and I practiced it in the car, and then I've completely biffed it. I forgot it right when I walked in here.
That's probably a good idea.
Dag nabbit.
It's better than
not.
I kind of wanted to hear it, Toby.
That's true. See, here's the thing. Everything sounds more epic when you're doing it in the car.
Right.
You're saying it, and it's just like in the shower. I got 15 good ideas in the shower, which means I actually had one good idea. Because everything sounds like you thought of something real sweet. I tried to explain this to my wife that, hey, you've been in the shower a long time. I do my best thinking in the shower. But here's the deal. 10 minutes after I get out of the shower, I've forgotten all of it. And then I think, maybe I actually don't do my best thinking in the shower.
I'm a pretty accomplished rapper only when no one is listening. Like, I'm really good at rapping when I'm the only one rapping around. It's the same deal. It's in the car, in the shower, and then anyone else around me, it's bad.
It's gone. Okay.
I feel like we take a shower differently. I like to clean the tub with my toe.
What?
Like, while I'm standing there, I'm like, you know, this tub could use a shining.
That is gross.
And then I'll scrub things with my toe for a bit.
Here's the deal. If you have something in your shower that could be scrubbed off with your toe, it could very easily take a once-over with a paper towel.
I think it's
clean.
A legit stain that don't come out, but it shocks me every time I go in there. I'm like, hey, man, what's that? Like, it's a new stain.
It's been there the whole time.
And then I think I'm going to take it out with my big toe.
Hey, that does happen to me because I'm almost blind without glasses on. And so once I take my glasses off and I'm in the shower, everything looks like it's a specter. Like, there's all kinds of creepy things in my tub crawling around at me. And if I put my glasses on, like, it's a legit, like, kid's toy or something that should be in there. But, like, it's creepy in there. I can't see well.
Do you say it like that? Like, a word, a specter.
A few times. Okay, here's what you can. I'm trying to keep an image from popping in your mind, but you can't.
Thank you.
You can't overreact in the shower. It could lead to embarrassment. If you flee the shower because there's a specter in there, it could lead to embarrassment. So you have to be cool.
Now here's the deal. I feel like if you're in the shower and you feel like bad things are coming, I feel like it's time to just submit to the Lord and be like, "Come, Lord Jesus, I ain't getting out of the shower."
Right.
Right.
He's going to have to murder me right here.
I'm in the nude. It's going to be how it's going to be.
Yeah, that's it. That's the end of things.
Whatever, man. If you have a burglar, that's the best time to do it. They would never expect that.
Yeah. The best offense is a good naked offense.
See? You just run out there. They're like, oh, man, I didn't expect this situation. It's like, I know you did. Yeah. And then they run away.
Yeah, they're like, all I wanted was a TV.
It's like, is that a loofah? Is that your weapon? Get it.
Hey, that's why most of your non-violence, like, hippie types are always, like, it could also be, like, nudists.
Yeah.
They're prepared to defend themselves, but in a way
it's
that's
a
not
defense
harmful.
Mechanism.
Yeah, if I was nefarious, I feel like I'd have a hard time accosting a naked man. You know, I was like, you know what, I'm going to go get the TV from the clothes guy. I can't deal with this right now.
Your stuff's nice, but not that nice.
All right. You've been... Okay, now that we've filtered out the illegitimate listeners, you've been listening to Live from the Path. If you're hanging around, yeah, this is on you from now on. We let out the cat way out early. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. So Wayne Stewart is in. Now, you've met Wayne. You've seen Wayne before. You'll recognize his face. And you will say, that is the man that has been on to the Live from the Path singing and dancing, except for not the dancing. So primarily singing. And so he's been on a few times. Just awesome. Make sure you go to lifefromthepath.org. Just do a search for Wayne Stewart. Lots of sweet clips from past time when Wayne has been in the studio. And so this is happening. I keep an eye on Wayne just to see what he's up to in his kitchen window and stuff. And, except for this time it was on Facebook, and I see that he's written a book. And so I thought it was a joke, right? Cause like people are like, hey, I wrote a book. And you're like, okay, you know, it's like a picture of you with your dog and stuff that you made on the snapfish.com. And now you're trying to get other people to buy it. It's a funny, funny haha. Except for it had like a sweet, like realistic title and book cover. And I thought, holy cats. And then it occurred to me, Wayne Stewart comes off as a guy that could legitimately write a book, right? Yeah. So you look into it. Some people, Boova, I'd just be like, yeah, definitely Snapfish.
Right.
Wayne Stewart, it's like a clever ruse or legit book. And it turns out it is indeed a legit book called When Totems Fall. And so we got a hold of Wayne, and so I want him to give us a give us like a quick introduction to the book, and then I got a whole bunch of questions about why you're writing a book. But let's start with kind of the premise. What is the book about? You got your microphone's kind of way up there. It's floated away from you.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay, so the book is When Totems Fall. Hit us with like a synopsis.
Yeah, When Totems Fall is it's a geopolitical thriller that takes place in dual settings. One is sort of the Seattle Puget Sound area, and then all the way across the world in China.
I'm sorry. Me and Boover are out already on the word geopolitical. What does that mean?
So there are nations that are prime actors in this storyline.
Okay, right.
And people who are involved both sort of in the military side of things as well as the political side of things. Basically, the action line is that the Chinese have developed technology that allows them to lock up American nuclear forces. And so then that opens the door for them to expand their reach onto the west coast of the United States, and their first test case is the Puget Sound area of Seattle. They decide that that's the best place to start, and so they take over.
Hey, man. So here's the thing: is I started reading this book. I'm about halfway through, which means Wayne cannot say too much about it, otherwise it will give the back half away. But there's a point in the book where, like, you're kind of getting introduced to these characters, you're like, okay, all right, these guys are kind of interesting, and then all of a sudden, like, stuff just starts happening, and you're like, I didn't see that coming. And here's the deal: like, a modern reader has a pretty open mind as to what wild things countries may do to another, or terrorism type of activity might occur. There's a plane crash, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, no, I get kind of what was happening here, and then it just starts skewing into like a I'm trying to not use page turner because that's what everybody says, but really it's like, what the heck? How do you deal with a situation which China goes, hey, we're just we're going to take over part of your country, and there's just not much you can do about it. Anyway, it's a grabber. It's a grabber. So
flipper.
It is. Oh man, hey, are you mocking me?
No, of course
not. I thought of three better words in the shower before I got here. So maybe if you'd be willing to kind of share, do you have it at the ready, like parts of the book? So Wayne's going to share. This is the plane scene.
Yeah, yeah. And a little setup for the characters here is that one of the main characters is a 37-year-old guy who's kind of a jaded vet who served in multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. So we try and pull from a little recent history militarily there. He's a guy who got into the military because of basically something he really messed up in college. It wasn't that he wanted to be in the military. It was sort of to keep himself out of trouble. He has a special gift in the sense that he can, his mind goes into overdrive, and he can sort of take all of the different scenarios in play in any situation and see all of the outcomes. He just can't order any of the outcomes, but he can see everything that's going to possibly happen. So that gift came in handy in the military. So he spent some time as a war vet, but gets pretty jaded because of what he's seen, and also some backstory that you get a little bit later in the book. So he's one of the main characters, and we'll pick up with him after one of the first things that the Chinese do to convince America that they really mean what they mean is they repurpose the communication structure for an airliner that's heading from Vancouver, B.C. to Seattle, Washington, and crash it right in the middle of the city at Pike Place Market, which is a pretty iconic place for folks from Seattle.
Is that the most likely Seattle area for movies and stuff, like where the guy's throwing
yep,
a fish?
That's
and
the
that
fish throwing place, yep.
Okay.
Yep, you bet. Right. Yeah, so pretty iconic. So he's basically woken up because he got knocked unconscious by the blast. He was a few blocks away at the time. He's tried to figure out what to do, and we start here. Zeb looked on the carnage in dismay. His name is Zeb Dalton, by the way. An initial wave of first responders began appearing on scene, navigating the formidable disorganized barriers of aluminum, steel, and flame in search of casualties. The disdainful work of triage, choosing who would live and who would not, became their primary and sordid task. By day's end, these selfless rescuers would join the grieving themselves, a number of their brethren lost in the battle against injury and death. Utterly powerless. Dalton hated this feeling with every single fiber of his being. Though personally spared the primary concussion of the plane's entrance, the horror of what unfolded before him gnawed at him, would not relent. Breathe. just breathe. Zebnew Pike Place was a multi-level structure built into a steep hillside above the waterfront district, a space that could be occupied at times by upwards of 5,000 people. Below street level, beyond the public face of buskers, artisans, and entrepreneurs, another layer of life existed, though, a small community of 500 full-time residents, many low-income and elderly. And now these lower-level passages had transfigured into a mass of awkwardly meandering wounded. The primal urge to surface led them upward through flame-engulfed passageways, from there out into the open turmoil of the Stewart Street entrance. All of it resembled a scene from a bad zombie movie. Clear my head. Help someone. Come on, Zeb, do something. Please, please, someone, she's still in there. He saw her, upright but weakened, leaning against what remained of the green metal framework of the market portico. She reached out toward the undead crowd with her bloodied right arm. No one responded. Please, please. Her words, though more emboldened with every syllable, became choked off by the damaging effect of smoke on her vocal cords. Zeb moved in. Who? Where? My friend, Sasha. She's old. I could not free her. She's still alive. I heard her cry. The young woman's voice and courage were returning. Beneath matted hair, drywall dust, and grease, mixed with bloodstains on clothing, it was still clear that she was beautiful and strong. Her accent, Balkan, Eastern European, possibly Russian or Czech. Zeb understood. This woman was heading back into the inferno with or without his help. The compelling picture of selflessness, unnecessary for him to act, was nonetheless inspiring. He would respond. He always did. As in moments like this, his middle name seemed an inescapable barometer of his character. Mordecai. In the biblical story of the Book of Esther, Mordecai is not obviously heroic. Instead, he appears to be standing by as his people, exiled into ancient Persia, face the unthinkable possibility of complete genocide. For those who look deeper into the text, though, something more surfaces. A man at work under the glaring eye of evil all around him. A man sizing up the times and circumstances of his fate and acting with courage while also prodding others into bravery. Zebulon Mordecai Dalton. This moniker had given him grief more than once on the playgrounds of his youth, as it was unusual for a middle-class Baptist American set of parents to choose a singularly Jewish name for one of their children. Yet when it came down to it, in choosing his name, his mom and dad knew something about him. Whether a product of parental instinct or divine insight, Dalton himself would uncover its aptness only in time and through trial. So it was no surprise then that Zeb took those first steps against and into the rushing tide of the injured and dying. His outlook on life had swerved hard toward the cynical and sarcastic as of late. This much was true. Yet it was also true that too much soldier remained in him to turn his back on the horrors unfolding in his city today. The first order of business was this woman's stranded friend. If Sasha had survived, Dalton would do his best to get her to safety. At the very least, he would bring her corpse out for a proper burial. Everyone else was leaving the market complex. Zeb headed in.
All right.
Man, that really does paint quite the scene.
It does. It does. And, like, I will say this, like, from where I'm at, one of Wayne's, like, really strong gifts is being able to kind of lay things out in a very universal way. Like, you're not getting a flat description. You're getting a lot of the emotion. You're getting a lot of, like, kind of the nuance of the scene that surrounds it. And so that's true with the characters. It's true with the scene. It's even true for, like, the scenarios that are kind of playing around it. So, like, Wayne certainly has a gift for that, if I can embarrass you in a room. So I would say the things that kind of grab you about that scene just continue to kind of explode as it goes through the book. Now, like I said, I'm only about halfway through. It could careen off the edge at the end. I'm not far enough. But so far, it's a high recommendation for me so far. And the book is When Totems Fall. It's by Wayne Stewart. Now, Wayne, if people are interested in picking up this book, where can they get it and when?
Yeah, there's a pre-order right now for both Kindle and paperback. And you can pre-order the Kindle at Amazon. So you just go to Amazon and you search for When Totems Fall, and you'll see the pre-order page that's there ready to go. And then that drops on the 28th, mm-hmm. So next Monday. Next Monday, yeah, is when the Kindle's available. And then 2 days later on the 30th is when the paperback's available. But you can also pre-order that. You just have to go to the website, which is whentotemsfall@wordpress.com.
Okay.
.wordpress.com.
Okay, sweet.
So is this your first foray into story writing, like fiction writing?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I did a nonfiction book, worship book.
Yeah, you know, we talked about that.
Yeah, a year ago. But this was the first jump into fiction.
So how long has this particular story been in your head? Just within that year, or you've been thinking on it for longer than that?
It's been a 3-year process. Yeah, it started off as a really weird short story that was kind of like half rainy day bored activity and part personal dare. So, like, I've read a lot of, Clive Cussler and a lot of the major sort of action guys.
Yeah.
Probably from my mid-20s forward, I started reading some of those books, Clancy, and loved just sort of the big story, you know, that was laid out in those and characters that built over multiple books. So about 3 years ago, I was sitting around, and I thought, yeah, I can do that, which was totally foolish, you know. So I start into it and realize, you know, there are real reasons why people do this for a living.
Yeah.
And give themselves to the craft and develop it over years and years. And so, yeah, but it's been a fun process, but it's taken a lot of time and a lot of commitment to it. But I knew I wanted to finish this story at least.
Yeah.
Felt like we needed to wrap it up here in the near term. So.
So what are some of the things that surprised you about the process, or things maybe that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, I was not ready for the depth of editing that needed to be done. My experience has been anyways that you can devise some characters that you like. You can devise a general outline of a storyline, and you can sort of get it all in flow. But in order for it to actually read without distraction, that's where I think the real craft comes in. So folks that you do normally read and you go, wow, I really loved that story, you weren't pulled out of it in any way, right?
Right.
It's because they took the extra time to just make sure that everything worked right, you know, the pacing and all that kind of stuff. So I'm very much on the front end of exploring this kind of thing. But it's been a good sharpening exercise in a lot of different ways, you know, thinking, writing, all those kind of things.
So I'm going to reveal my potential inability to read things right. So at the front cover's got a picture of, like, what it looks to me is like the Space Needle with the Chinese stars next to it. Is that right?
Yep.
I must have looked at that 10 times, and it did not occur to me until about a quarter way through the book, and then it kind of hit me, and I felt very smart at the time. I felt very wise.
Yeah, there should be some kind of a prize or something for that. You know, there have been a few people who are like, oh, I get it. Yeah, so, yeah, it's a stylized Chinese flag emblem on the Space Needle.
Now, so did you do that, or did you find someone to do the art for it? Or?
So that's the other part of the process here is that normally people, when they do independent publishing, you know, without a publisher who's doing all of this work for them,
yep.
They hire editors, they hire people to do the artwork, all those things. It's really had to come down to me, so I've been doing everything so far. So any of the, I guess there's good and bad in that, right? If it's decent, then I guess maybe I worked at it and it turned out okay. If it's not, then it's probably my fault. So
okay, yeah. Well, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Did anything about your character surprise you as you went, or are you the type of guy where like you know exactly what they're going to do as they go?
No, I didn't actually. Yeah, and there's two. So the dual scenes that happen in Seattle and in America generally, and then in China, the chapters of you as you've seen sort of go back and forth, and then in the middle of chapters sometimes you'll switch scenes too, so that you get an idea of these two storylines that are happening in parallel. Because what happens is, so there's a young businessman, Chinese businessman, whose company gets the government contracts in China to develop this technology. He's very nervous about what it could be used for once he realizes how potent it is. So he agonizes over handing this over finally to the government, but he does it. And immediately regrets it because he sees what they've done with it. One of the surprises is that the Chinese guy is actually the believer in the story. And so he is coming from trying to figure out how to live out a life of faith as a businessman in China, and feels like he's really, really traded away some of his soul in this for the government contracts and the money and all that kind of stuff. So he immediately starts trying to reverse it, the deeds of his government, at the same time as the jaded American vet is trying to work on the American side of things. So it's really... hopefully interesting that those two characters try and carry sort of the moral sense of outrage about this forward, but in very different ways.
Yeah.
I feel like you could easily identify with both of those dudes, actually. You know, it's like it's in some capacity either one of them have something to offer you. So that's cool.
And there was something about that that I was going to say. What was it? Doggone it, Mike.
Sorry.
Let me hop in the shower. nope, gone completely. Gone completely. Tell me, was there anything about the story as you were writing it that, were all these things familiar to you and you're kind of writing for what you know, or there
aspects
of the story?
That's a good question.
That you had to, really investigate because you didn't have the knowledge to be able to write to it on a
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, have you been to China? How do you know what it feels like to be a Chinese businessman? I was thinking that the whole time.
You just took on the role of the hype man for Ben's question.
Well, that's a good question. Yeah. I was excited about that one because I was thinking it myself.
You're the guy that holds the belt as I walk out.
Okay, deal.
Okay.
So I grew up in Seattle. Lived there prior to 13, 14 years ago. So pretty much my whole life grew up there. So all of the scenes from Seattle are things that are very sort of well-worn places for me, and sort of the feel of the Pacific Northwest in general, which is a very different sort of part of the country. And so those things, that felt pretty easy to step into. The other side of it, I had no idea. And I honestly can't tell you how the dual sort of framework came out. I just started writing a little bit and I thought, well, what if this happened, right? And then kind of explored it from there. But I will tell you that my search history in my browser has all kinds of things that I may be on a watch list for. Chinese military technology, the development of their missile systems and capabilities and all those kind of things. So, but it was fun to kind of, poke away at that a little bit. But one of the best sort of people I had come into the picture really late in the last month and a half or so is a good buddy of mine who's a retired Marine. Mm-hmm. And I said, man, if you could just read this for me and just tell me how far I'm off, because there's a ton of military characters and interaction and all kinds of things that go on in this book, and I've never served.
Right.
I have a great amount of respect, for folks who have. And so he said, yeah, I'll read it. So he comes back and he's like, yeah, it shows that you've never been in the military. But that started a process of him saying, hey, what if you did this? Hey, what if you did this? What if you did this?
Nice.
And at the end, he was like, yeah, that felt honoring. So so I hope it was.
Oh, cool.
And I hope it comes off that way.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there were a few points where you were especially writing about the Chinese military technology. And, of course, I have a bit of a fourth wall problem because I'm like, Wayne Stewart's a genius. Mm. He knows all about the Chinese military. And then I pictured you Googling stuff about the Chinese military.
Exactly.
And yeah. I don't know how closely those two pictures came together.
Yeah.
It would be pretty funny if someone wrote in and be like, it's pretty obvious you've never been a Chinese man.
Wayne Stewart. Yeah.
How dare you, sir? Yeah.
So tell me about the kind of the moment when you I recognize there's an editing process here, but was there anything big about kind of the last sentence, as you're kind of tying up this thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually. And I hope it lands well for people, right? I mean, that's the point, is you're trying to create a connection with folks as they read this so they actually care about the people that are in the story, right?
You know?
So hopefully we got there. And I didn't know how to end the very last piece for a month or two. I just sort of said it. And I had a couple of sort of sketch ideas about it. And I literally sat up in bed one night and went, I got it. And I went out to the living room at 2 a.m. And I just pecked it out and got it done. And when I got it done, I went, I think that's it. And it got changed a little bit, for editing. But the basic gist of it landed, I think, where it should. So I'm pretty happy with where it goes.
So did you have someone else edit it, or did you do your own editing?
Yeah, so my wife is a great proofreader,
uh-huh.
So she's doing that side of things. But there's a whole other level of editing that's sort of structural and copy editing.
Yep.
And that's sort of, do the ideas make sense? Does the timeline make sense? Are there any conflicts and gaps, that are obvious that, again, pull people out of the story so they don't just keep moving along? That has taken a lot of time, and actually, I just sort of had an OCD moment on Saturday where I went, man, does the timeline actually still make sense? And I wrote out just a little 30-day calendar, and I just sort of sketched some stuff out on it, and went, because especially because there's dual time frames, and there's 15 hours of difference between Seattle and Beijing.
Yeah.
And so some of those things you go, well, maybe some people won't care about this, but maybe somebody will.
Somebody will.
Yeah,
they don't sell tuna that time of night in Beijing.
Yeah.
You should have known better.
Exactly.
Actually, you know, the truth is it's the right type of people, the people that really dig on what you're doing, that care about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it does honor them as readers to pay close attention to things they care
about. You're glorifying these guys. They've ruined the internet.
No.
You know what I'm saying? You can't barely put anything out where some Nerdenheimer come out of nowhere and be like, well, that doesn't seem right. His cell phone battery should be dead. Okay, dude. You know, it's an entertainment deal. You know, calm down.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, but like, it's those same type of people who like care about the things you cared about as you were creating art. Who like they might casually and there's the common populace will casually enjoy some things, and then there's some guys who are like checking every frame, basically all your Star Wars, Star Trek folks.
Don't judge me. I saw you look at me right in the face when you said Star Wars.
I understand. I'm just saying, it's like a lot of times, although they can be your greatest critique factory, they also are the type of folks that really dig on what you do.
That's true.
So you don't even use the internet to its fullest extent.
Mike. I've acquiesced to what you've said. I still believe in what I said more.
Okay. All right. Mike, did I cut you off? Did you have another question?
I had one, and then we got on them Nerdenheimers, and then I can't remember. Oh, now I remember what it was. So when you were talking about the editing process, it seems to me like it would be really hard to read it fresh. You know, like you just wrote it, and like as soon as I write something, I'm like, that's gold. That's gold. You know, and then I go back and read it again. I'm like, yeah, still gold. You know? And so it'd be really hard for me to read something I've put together and not be trying to like secretly, you know, boost my own confidence, but like, yeah, I still think that's pretty good. You know? So like, is there something that you have to do to help read it fresh again?
Yeah, I think you, two things that helped for me for sure is there were a couple of actual online tools, take from a fiction writer's perspective whatever you throw at it and just comes back to you with a brutal red pen. Mm-hmm. And it's grammar, it's flow, it's pace, it's the use of terms, the overuse of terms, it's cliche, it's all this stuff, right? And I found some really great ones that people were actually using and highly recommended. So I plugged into a couple of those and I literally spent like 6 weeks going through all of the chapters again at that point. And that was brutal, but I think it turned out really, really good. And then the second thing is I've had two different phases of beta readers for this. So I had an early manuscript, maybe even a year ago, that I had an initial group of a couple, three people, and I just said, would you just read this thing and just be honest with me, right? And they were people I knew they would give me good feedback. And then that moved forward into a last group of three or four that just finished up in the last couple of weeks. And they were super, super helpful. I mean, there are people who like this genre, don't like this genre, you know, but good readers and people who are thoughtful and people who give me good feedback. So, it's been a good mechanism.
It seems to me like it, and maybe a process that I would not be willing to subject myself to, right? But like the process of refinement for a story like that, or how you write, or the style that you write in, or what you thought was, yeah, that was perfectly made sense, and a guy says it doesn't make sense, and I'm like, yeah, it does, you know, what do you mean it doesn't make sense to you, you know? And offering your story up and your writing style up for refinement, seems like you have the right heart for the best product, right? And opposed to just putting out, you know, what the story that you thought was golden, say, go. And so that is pretty, and that's true with just about everything, right? Like, if you're open for refinement, you'll get it. And sometimes harsher than you wanted or easier than you wanted, but it definitely happens. And so that sounds pretty cool. Sounds like a tough process.
Yeah, I think if you want it to be better, you've got to get some input, right? And then you got to figure out what to do with the input. And if you get multiple people or sources saying the same thing, it's probably something to take note of, you know, and I think, too, you know, because I've never fashioned myself as a fiction writer.
Yeah.
This was sort of more exploration than anything else. I was like, honestly, even when I got that manuscript done about a year ago and offered it to folks, I had no idea whether it was decent or whether anybody would want to read it.
Right.
You know, so I kind of was open-handed with it at that point. And, yeah, it's worked out pretty good.
Is there any characters that you had to lose that you wish you didn't want to but you had to?
That I had to cut out?
Yeah.
No, actually, I haven't.
You're able to hang on to everybody.
I was able to hang on to everybody. Yeah, yeah. Because it's a big storyline. It requires a lot of players, right? A handful of major players,
right?
And then a bunch of folks who are just kind of around the edges, but hopefully add to the storyline.
That's true. The platform of the story, the nature of the story, does give you a lot of room to play around because, like, it basically has an impact to the whole world. Whichever lens you kind of want to focus in on and say, like, this is how this guy is dealing with it. This is what it looks like in the upper echelons of government. This is what it looks like for your quasi-frontline uniformed, army sniper or something. You know, like,
yeah.
you just get kind of, you can kind of zero in on how that impacts part of the underground Christian contingent in China. Like, it's just a very cool kind of push in, bring back out, push in. It lets you kind of explore a wide range of the world without feeling too lost in a situation like that. So I want to say congratulations, Wayne. Like I said, I'm about halfway through, and it's really a compelling read. And so I would encourage everyone to go check it out. Again, you go to windtoadwindsfall.wordpress.com, and you can pre-order the paperback, or I did. I pre-ordered on Amazon. Now, technically, I say I'm halfway through it because Wayne snuck me a copy, but, like, I still pre-ordered on Amazon as well. And so it's a dead easy process. It's just like ordering anything off Amazon, and then it'll just deliver it to your Kindle or whatever it is you use, and you can do it there. But once again, a big congratulations, Wayne. That's a heck of an accomplishment, and not just that you finished something, but you finished something that's an excellent read. So congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Excited for Wayne. Make sure you go pick that up. Here's the deal. We've talked about this with bands that have come in too. It's true with artists and things. But part of the great thing about artists, the conversation, is being able to engage in it some way or other, right? So, like, as you read the book, react to it, right? Like, it's okay to not like something the characters did. Like, it's at least you're engaging in the story. I wish this guy would have done this, or I loved it. I love the heart of this person, or I love this, or I love that, or I hate this. Like, it's all a cool part of kind of an artistic process, and so I would recommend kind of engaging in that and hit Wayne with some thoughts and some feedback on the. You can hook up with it on Facebook, and I think there's a place that you can do it on the. I thought I saw it on the website too. Or am I wrong about that?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can do that stuff. So, like, I mean, just engage in art broadly. But this is a cool thing, especially kind of if you're in the area to be able to engage kind of with Wayne and what he's put together. I think it's certainly worth checking out.
Thanks so much.
Okay, Mike, so you were talking to me about, was it an article that you read earlier this week?
Yeah, so, and it was, I saw it come across the Facebook or whatever, and I read it, and I was kind of excited about it at first, and then I thought about it for a second, and then I'm like, man, I don't know what I think. And so that's standard me fare, is I have an instant reaction to something, and then I step back a couple feet, and I go, man, I have a history of being an idiot. And so I have to step back and see if I was thinking about it correctly. And so... I'll read you the story real quick. It was in the local Des Moines Register here, but it was there was an act of vandalism against a bar downtown. It says, it's only been a few days since the Blazing Saddle was vandalized, leaving the gay bar with a shattered window, the result of a man throwing rocks. However, in the time it's taken to board up the glass and make arrangements to replace the second broken window in recent weeks, the LGBT-friendly bar in the East Village has been tremendous support from the community. A Christian youth group from the Two Rivers Church brought in a donation of $160, flowers and cards to show its support. Brian Smith, a Blazing Saddle employee, said the small act of kindness meant a lot, but the money needed to go somewhere else. We thanked them profusely, but said, we're actually going to put this in an Orlando fund, okay? Smith said. The bar has been gathering donations to send to the injured victims and families of the 49 people killed in Orlando at the massacre. When asked for comment about its donation, Two Rivers told the Des Moines Register, we prefer to let our actions of love speak for us. Like the out-of-the-blue gestures that the bar has been receiving from strangers in the Des Moines community. So here's the thing that hit me, right? Like there's something right off the bat I really enjoyed. It's like, was people actually doing something loving in general, right? Toward a group of people that the church has reacted very poorly to and not done a good job in that area. And so, like, I read it right off the bat, and I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Okay, I can get on board with this. They're showing love to people that don't normally get to feel love from the Christian community. And I thought, yes. And then I stepped back for a second and I thought, this is going to sound terrible because this is what I'm struggling with, right? But, like, are you helping someone put their Asherah pole back up? You know what I'm saying? Like, something happened and you didn't want it to happen, nor did you wish bad things to happen. But, like, the thing that is actually driving them away from a relationship with God, you're helping to rebuild. And then now I'm confused again. And I couldn't decide where I actually thought. Like, I still feel like I'm solidly in the first camp where, like, you showed love and that was the way to go. And I think that's where I'm at. But then I thought, am I rebuilding the Baal temple? You know, someone, a little piece of window fell out of the Baal temple, and I'm like, here, I'll help you repair it. I don't know. Help me. Help me. I feel like there's a very shallow part of me that doesn't know quite what to think here, although I sit firmly in the love is the rule.
Help him, Booba. What's going on in your mind?
So I actually, as you're reading that, I ran through both in the exact same way that you ran through. Because immediately I'm just like, heck yeah, man. You know, that's people that claim Christ loving on people. And that's an incredible thing. And that's an awesome deal that I think that we fail at way too often. We do a really good job of calling people out for something they're doing wrong, but then we have no recourse of, hey, let's talk about how Jesus loves you and then bring you under that before we talked about the rules of his kingdom. But then I'm also in the second camp of, yeah, there's not a lot of, like, Christ-loving stuff that happens in that place. Like, and I'm not trying to condemn anybody for what they're doing, but, like, I know what happens in that bar. Like, I'm not oblivious to the fact that is a certain type of bar where certain types of things happen.
Let me simplify the operation. It's not, let's call it not Blazing Saddles. It's just, it's the whole Avenue Tap.
Okay.
Now
okay.
Go.
Actually, I still feel the exact same way.
Me too.
Yeah. I'm still confused.
Yep.
I'm not saying that I like, but here's actually what I think.
That's what I was hoping for. I think that it just puts it on a field where.
Yeah, if your bar just got lit on fire, regardless of what kind of bar it is, you know, I'm probably not going to go to your rescue to help build your bar back up.
Yeah, but why not though?
I'm fine with helping the people, but I don't think that.
I mean, here's the thing.
I guess I'm just as confused as you are.
Let's say there's a window out of the whole Ave Tap. The whole Ave Tap is just a regular old drink till the late night bar. It's just a regular bar. Right? Someone throws a rock at it, breaks the window. I am not so foolish to think that it's going to affect business either way. The man that wants to get in there and not know Jesus will go in there regardless whether the window is up and rocking or not.
It's not like the alcoholic dude's going to be like, well, can't go there anymore. You see the window? Like, that's
a
problem.
I don't drink with the breeze.
Yeah. that's
right. The air conditioning is not nearly as effective any longer. I cannot enjoy my whiskey sour here any longer.
No longer. So here's the thing. I think what I actually came to is it's kind of a stupid thought process of mine. Like, it makes any difference at all whether the window's up and running. The showing love to people is like, I mean, I've been on this for a while, but like the rules of the kingdom are like a big club to the head unless you know the king.
Right.
Right? And so like our job is to love people like Christ would have loved people. And then when they get to know Jesus, Jesus will introduce them the rules of the kingdom, how he does it. He does that on his own. He puts people around for shepherding and helping. But in general, when I've ever had a conversation with somebody, when I personally came to know Christ, it's not like someone said, these are all the things wrong with your life. You need to change them so you can know Jesus. It was always, I started to get to know Jesus, and I'm like, I feel like you're after that, Jesus. Okay, well, let's talk about it then. I'll find some people to help me and get some fences set up. Because I want to be in your kingdom because I feel loved by you. I know the king. My behavior starts to change because I want to be in the kingdom, right? And so, like, any rule-based condemnation is stupid, and frankly, I just don't think that's Jesus at all.
Right.
But I think that I put a lot of it's not – the Asherah pole thing is not a fair – it's not a fair comparison. You know what I'm saying? And so I read it, and I thought if I struggled with this for the first 10 minutes – there has to be other people that would ask themselves the same question.
Yeah.
And where I think that I can work past it and go, I actually think that they did the right thing. And that takes a lot of balls to do that. You know what I'm saying? Especially in the Christian community where half your community is going to go, not a great idea.
We can't go near those people.
Yeah, exactly. And so they actually did a pretty cool thing. But I thought I shouldn't be struggling with this. That's actually what bothered me is the fact that I looked at it and I couldn't decide what I actually thought.
What I will say is I'm not so much worried. I think we're kind of in the same camp again. I'm not so much worried about my reaction from the second perspective of, you know, are we really rebuilding the right place? I'm still kind of riding the fact that I'm excited that people who love Christ showed it.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about that. From a societal perspective, we are not good at doing that part. And I think they, regardless of if it was something just showing up and giving them money or, you know, if they showed up with a broom and said, can I help you sweep up? Like, whatever that was, if they showed up trying to have personal interaction with people that some Christians would just go, oh, I can't be seen with those people. I can't be seen in that area. If we showed up from the perspective of, hey, we're going to love on you. Christ calls us to love you, and we're going to do exactly that. I think that that's, no matter what the outcome was, a huge step in the right direction for some people, and especially for a youth group. Like, I'm happy that the youth group was able to give a better reaction than, you know, a youth pastor walking up and saying, hey, let's talk about why they're living in sin.
Yeah.
And let's talk about why what they do is a sin. Rather than, you know, what they did, which was, hey, let's see if we can help them out because Jesus loves them. How can we love them too?
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's a reason to have, I'm not going to use the phrase conflicted, but right, but there's a reason to run this through. It's because the truth is that you and I would believe that the calls to righteousness within the kingdom are not caveats of the kingdom. They are grace in the kingdom, right?
Correct.
Like
right.
That call to righteousness is just as much grace as the love from the Father that extends. And that otherwise from Jesus who defines the kingdom. And so the truth is that, like, I don't want to, if I'm hearing what you're saying, what you're trying to be careful not to do is, like, not to make it sound like those calls to righteousness aren't grace by just saying, we do this in a certain way, but, basically we also know that encouraging something that is otherwise not part of that call to righteousness is a bit of a denial of the same grace that otherwise people would define as the fact that you showed up and demonstrated it in a way that they felt, somebody felt loved. Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And see, and once again, touch the subject, right? But like, it'd be just the same as, like, I know I have a couple friends of mine, like they're straight up alcoholics. It's what they are. That's what they're mired in. Right. They feel loved when you bring booze over to their house. That's how they feel loved. When you don't do that, then they say, why aren't you loving on me? Why don't you come hang out my place anymore? Why don't we have good times anymore? And they feel like you're withholding your love, you know? And when you're like, hey, man, it's best for me not to give this to you. It's in your best interest that you don't have this thing. And like, some of that is where that's coming from. And like I said, the thing that actually took hold of me more was I know better than my first thought. I know better than that, right? But it was still my first thought. It's still the first thing that came to me, and I thought, what has happened to me? I know, it's always been me. Nothing has changed. But, like, I know the grace and love of Jesus Christ, and I know what really unconditional, raw love looks like. And still my first thought is, I think they might be building Asherah poles. I don't know if we should fix the window. I'm like, I know better than this, right? Well, so why is this sticking with me so much?
So maybe I wonder if, let me present you two different scenarios and see which one sniffs right. Like, if someone said, hey, look, would you buy a window for the opportunity to demonstrate to someone who Jesus is for you?
Yes.
Okay. Would you buy a stripper pole and do the same thing?
No.
Okay, so what matters what you buy?
Yeah, it does matter, doesn't it?
It matters what you buy, right? You know, like, there's something that this seems like a very legalistic distinction that I'm trying not to make, but I think what I'm saying is that there's a level of contribution here where, like, I care about calls to righteousness only because it's still a grace within the kingdom. I think those are still for our good. And so if, like, I could replace 15 windows a year for the next 60 years, and short of recognizing the love of the king, you know,
yeah.
They felt loved in the way that they felt loved. But, you know, they're still in the same spot. But the truth, I would completely agree, though, is that, like, those calls to righteousness, frankly, only matter if they actually know the king. Otherwise, I don't know why I trust your moral authority over my own. Like, when we talked about this recently, right? Like, when people say, hey, I got to be true to myself, like, that's not a surprise. In fact, they're telling the truth. That's a completely honest reaction, because who else would I be true to? Short of, I don't trust you, and I don't believe in an all-encompassing God, why would I trust anybody else's call to be true to that? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Pretty much all I got. Just me.
And so the truth is, what we try to do is try to bring some level of moral authority in, coming from a God that they don't trust and from a Jesus they don't follow. Of course, I mean, I would buff up against that if someone said, Zeus says you have to do the following. And I would say, right. I don't know Zeus. I don't have any reason to stop doing
what
I'm doing.
He seems untrustworthy. Yeah. Everything I've heard about him, he's a shicey fella.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. It's like, it frankly doesn't do you any good to say, Jesus says to do X, Y, and Z if they don't know Jesus, as they know Jesus. And frankly, if it's going to cost me a window to help people know Jesus, awesome.
Right.
I think that's fine. If it's going to cost me a stripper pole, that's not ends justifying the means, right? Like we say, we be faithful in the means. God will take care of the ends. That's provoking the means. But yeah. I mean, so here's, let me say this is like, I get the thought, right?
Sure.
It's because I care about the grace that comes through the calls to righteousness, but it makes sense in my parameter. when I look at some of this stuff, like Matthew 5-7 stuff that Jesus calls me to, those are grace for me. It helps me put up the right fences and say, look, man, I want joy and things that glorify the King. And I know it comes from these two things. So I want in on them. I want other people to be in on those two things. And so maybe I lead with that. I forget that they don't know the Jesus through whom which those things come. And without that connection, they rightfully dismiss them like I would from Zeus.
True.
And so, but the thought process exists. If I can give you the two of you guys a little bit of credit, because I would have thought that I've gone through the same thought process, it's because I care about the righteousness, because it brings me joy and glory to the Father.
Right. Yeah.
And so, like, I get it. I don't think it's wrong to run through the thought process. It's just, if you look at it from where other folks may be coming from, if our first reaction is to take out the calls to righteousness, but it's from an authority that they don't trust or love, I'm with them. Like, right. I get it. I understand where that's coming from. And frankly, a lot of Christianity is unfair, but I think it's the right heart. It's just the wrong process. We think these things are good for us. They will be good for others. But short of knowing the King, that's how I know they're good. That's where the definition of that they are good comes from, is from, the King and the kingdom through which they serve. And so if you don't have that, you're not going to see it as good. And I get it.
Yeah, I think, like you see that kind of stuff happen, and this is obviously not a discussion on what they did or didn't do. Like they seem like great folks to me. I don't have any judgment on any of that. But like I have a real I don't know. I'd say it's a ting in me when I see Christians representing themselves when they boil Christianity down to a slogan type of love. You know, I'm like, please don't do that. The real love is awesome, you know.
The Jesus bumper sticker.
It's just awesome, and you're like you're boiling it down to see you saw I did this thing or whatever. And like I said, this is not about them. They did not say that. They're like, you know, we don't have an interview to give. We're gonna let our love show. And like the only thing I can think of is that they're like, would you like to talk about this? No, no, that's it. Yeah, no.
How would you like to glorify yourselves with this? Not at all.
Yeah, zero. I don't even talk to you. You know, that's the kind of indignant, raw Jesus love that I can really dig on. Like, I'm sorry, you have the wrong number style stuff. You know?
Any comment? Not at all.
Don't even talk to me. You know, but like I said, it was an interesting thought process, and I actually felt it was a little bit condemning in the beginning. I'm like, why am I this way? I don't want to be this way. Can you refine this part out of me, Lord? I don't even want to look at this and have some kind of opinion on it. You know, I just want to be like, yeah, okay. But then I'm like, I don't know. When you start putting it in different examples, apart from the hot button topic, I'm like, you know, I wouldn't bring, you know, hey, I'm sorry you broke your whiskey bottle, Grandpa. You know, I brought you another one.
Hey, you know, the fifth.
And then it starts to feel a little bit different.
Well,
you know?
There's a certain level of discernment you have to have when relationship building from the perspective of I want to get to know this person so that I can introduce them to Jesus so that there can be a call to righteousness. You know, you can build a relationship by showing up and sweeping, but at the same point in time, I probably wouldn't show up to a heroin addict's den and just be like, hey, I brought some heroin. Do you want to do this with me? And we can really get to know each other.
We can bond.
Like, right, we can do the same thing, and then we have something to talk about, the track marks in our arm. Like, we're not going to do that together. But, I mean, I'd show up with a broom. Like, there's just certain levels of discernment you have.
Wait, why are you bringing a broom to the heroin addict's house?
Maybe it's dirty.
He's going to be way confused.
Maybe. Hey. He's going to. That's my conversation starter. Hey, John.
I don't know.
I know you're expecting me to show up with some black tar heroin, but I have a broom. Would you like to talk about Jesus?
Actually, I think that would work. If, say, John,
he's going to sweep up your soul. We're going to clean up in here.
You would at least have a spot to say, John, just recognize that you're on heroin. Some things are just going to seem confusing at the moment.
Right. There's a good chance this broom's a dragon. Hey, man. Now, I'm just going to have a broom in my
head. You should say ouch every once in a while.
Oh, that's hot.
What's the matter? Nothing?
Everything's so now fine. It's just a confusing broom to start a conversation?
Yeah.
Hey, man, why'd you bring in the hurdy broom?
Until it turns out he's not actually on heroin and he thinks you are.
He's trying to turn you for Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. We both start, hey, do you want to know about Jesus? Hey, man, I already know about Jesus. Wait a minute, what? Hey,
you brought in a broom dragon.
Hey, you don't know Jesus. Originally, I was going to call you to Jesus. Let's just have some fellowship now. You want to talk about your broom? I'm totally going to keep a broom in the back of my truck now, just in case.
So maybe the takeaway from this whole deal is like, don't be afraid to walk through that process, right? Like, just like Wayne was talking about earlier, refinement is a bit of a process. You got to figure out where you stand. And if it turns out that you're just dead wrong, you know, repent of that, Jazz, and move away from it. You know? But like, you can't figure out if you're dead wrong if you didn't stop and take a look at it and see what you thought and where it was at and where your heart was doing. So I don't think there's anything wrong with going through the process, but You know, be willing to be condemned for it. You know, if you were just wrong, be wrong. Yeah. And then say, Lord, I'm sorry, change this way.
And that's the thing, is like that type of understanding of a it's not really a balance. It's like a full force on both things. Jesus has got down, and we traditionally stink at. Like, we swing harder with the right or left depending on what's going on in our lives or how we see a particular situation. And so, like, I think the Holy Spirit levels that stuff out for you. You just got to be willing to submit the righteousness of your action over to it and say, look, I just tell me how to deal with this right. Tell me how to look at a guy in the right way. Tell me how to react to a guy in the right situation. And we can look at Jesus for our example. And then it starts to sort those things out. But here's the thing, is the pause is a value. The pause is a value in a Christian life where, like, we don't feel like we have to go half-cocked in any given situation and get on a microphone about something.
Yeah.
Right? That's why we run an hour show that people, you know, like, we couldn't do this type of conversation. It was like a 5-10 minute conversation when on like a traditional radio format, but like we can't work stuff out that way. No. I don't know how to talk about it without giving it a good 30 minutes, because then I have a shot at least to coming something that makes some sense, so that we're trying to handle things the right way. And like, yeah, I mean, you're gonna jack it up at times, but like at least gives you a shot to say, look, I'm gonna look for Jesus for a while and see what he's doing, and then try to pull the trigger on whatever it is I got going on, as opposed to feeling like I got to fire off at the cuff and represent the entirety of Christendom with my gut reaction. Seems like a real problem.
I've actually
welcome to the internet.
This is gonna sound bad, but like I've taken to, like, I envision the Holy Spirit as Gandalf the Grey. Don't.
I just want you to stop there.
Here's why.
Just there.
It's and it's not to take the reverence away, but like I have to have something that triggers me to want to know. And so like I know when I'm in the gray. I know when I'm like, I don't know what I think here. And then I'm like, because I will immediately think, I don't know what I think here. This is gray. And then automatically my head will go, Gandalf the Grey. The Holy Spirit's Gandalf the Grey. Ask the Holy Spirit. Because I know, left to my own devices, I will fight to be the one that dominated the right thought. You know what I'm saying? Like, I will put myself in control of that and be like, you got to figure this out, Mike. You got to get to the bottom of this thing. But then Gandalf the Grey shows up and goes, nope. Holy Spirit's got this one. And I go, all right then, Grey, I'm out for a minute. You know, I'll back it down. So I don't know if that will help anyone else. Either that, or you can take up heroin and use Gandalf the Grey on your own.
You may be holding a broom.
I recommend the first go around.
All right. Hey, you're listening live from The Path. You can check out, I don't know why you would do this, but past episodes from the show at Live from The Path.
Yeah, we have definitely not given them compelling reason to do so.
Like I said earlier, the easiest way to filter out the good for good content, just do the search for Wayne Stewart. I feel like it's safe to do that. You can watch the first half, well, maybe not the first 6 minutes, but after that, until Mike started talking, part of the show. And there's some
classic.
Wayne's here. He was performing with Chris Akers, who's got a new album henceforth. We were trying to work out the right way to bring him in. A man with his hairstylings has to be brought in the right way. And so
that's true.
We're working on that. Like, he's been here before, and I feel like we didn't do it upright. Chris Akers.
Oh, yeah, his poster's cool on the wall, man. Did you see his poster? Look at that hair.
Here's it. I almost took him off my Facebook feed because I can't take him anymore. You know what I'm saying?
What?
Like, I walk past the mirror, I'm like, ugh. And then I see Chris Akers on the Facebook. I'm like, come on.
You could go outside looking a little rough sometimes, you know?
The man just has it. And that's,
I'm just telling you, he's got it down.
Late night internet radio, the man's got it. Anyway, so he's got an album that is coming. He's in fact, you could, if you go look for him for his public page on Facebook, you can hear a clip of it. Are the full songs out there? Mm-hmm. I think he's got the full song out there. Anyway, lots of exciting stuff coming from the Chris Akers camp. So we got to figure out how to do that right, and then I'm going to not do it, and then we'll just have to have him in regular style relatively soon. But go check that out. But like past clips of the show, you'll see Wayne and Chris in here together, and some past hits from Wayne, including 78, which is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I do love 78.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Just once, I wish on the show we could give an endorsement to someone that didn't turn creepy within 30 seconds.
Yeah, sorry.
It's just, hey, they're a great character, they do wonderful at what they do, and I don't have a creepy comment about them that has to do with me looking at them in social media and saying, hey, that guy is snazzy, or figuring out, hey, I watched them through their kitchen window. Like, just one time. I've been waiting years for one endorsement.
People thirst for the type of honesty that we provide on the show. Where other people are like, yeah, Chris is okay. You know, I like his tunes or whatever.
Listen to his music.
They are secretly thinking, that's cool hair. But they don't want to say that because they might be creepy.
On Live from the Bath, we tell it like it is.
See,
if we think your hair is nice,
I'm talking about, yeah,
we'll tell you. If we think your hair is good enough to shame us.
Yeah. It don't take much.
We'll tell you.
Okay, yeah, Mike, what do you got over there?
Okay, here we go. It's Dear Live from the Path.
Wayne, Emmy, feel free to jump in on it. It's advice time.
Okay. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path. I have officially found my biggest pet peeve. It's a pervasive issue with my generation of committing to something and not showing up. They'll flake at the last minute or refuse. This is you, Booba.
Yeah, I was going to say, replace my generation with Booba.
Trust me. In my head, I did what I have to do in Proverbs, and I changed fool to Booba. I totally just did a... I did a... This is someone... Was this one of you guys that complained about me?
I wouldn't write them. Okay. Here we go. Booba will flake out at the last minute or refuse to commit to something because there's a possibility something better will come along. And he constantly shows up late, has become normal with young adults. Furthermore, despite the many technological advances that allow us to communicate quickly, Booba's failure to communicate about plans astounds and infuriates me. I've encountered this problem too often with Booba, and Booba.
I am a lot of people to this person.
I have tried to let it roll off my back. I have tried to let it roll off my back and remind people about how their rudeness affects others, but I'm not sure what else I can do. Obviously, I can't control other people. How can I express my frustration without being a monster? Booba, how's this handled?
All right, here's the deal. You gentlemen have handled this correctly. There's a certain level of stop giving them a safe zone that needs to happen. If you've got somebody in your life that is constantly terrible at me, if I'm in your life and I'm constantly terrible about telling you I'm going to do something and then not doing it, get away from their safe zone and tell them. Look them in the face and say, I can tell you 5 things in the last 6 months that you've told me you were going to do and you didn't do. Why are you being a fool? Why do you keep lying to me? And is this honestly how you want to act for the rest of your life? Because there's a good chance they need that. And I will tell you that I've had to have that before. Like within the last 6 months, I've had to seriously step back and go, I think it's James where it's let your yes be yes and your no be no, right? Like I know that that's kind of sort of in a different situation, but I kind of take that also from the perspective of if I say I'm going to do something, I need to do it. And if I say I'm not going to do something, I need to stick to that. My generation is terrible at that. We are awful at saying, yeah, I can do that, but in the end, oh, it's just like a Facebook RSVP that I can just change at any time and go not going. And it's ridiculous. You have to take it upon yourself because some other people may not do it and they need to hear that they're being ridiculous and they're being disrespectful to the people that they're dealing with. So a word from someone who's a recovering Booba. I can tell you, yeah, you need to stop lying because that's exactly what you're doing. If you have no intention of going and you're saying you're going, you're lying. If you say you're going and you have intentions to going, but then you back out at the second part, your word means nothing.
Yeah.
You mean absolutely nothing. Your word means nothing. You are laughed at and you have no deserve for respect. That is exactly where you are. You are a fool and you're a joke.
Yeah. Get him, Booba. Here's the deal, like Booba, he ain't telling the lies here. I grown men have this problem, you know, and like the problem is what normally suffers is their family, mm-hmm. right? Like their Absolutely. Inability to say no, I'm not going to do this, like to their employer, to their buddies or whatever, where they know their priorities ahead of time. They know they should be home with their wife and their kids doing what they're supposed to,
right?
And they will be like, yeah, well, you know, like their inability to say no, I consider that just as much a lack of integrity as is outright lying and say you're going to be somewhere and not be there.
Wait, right. I think you keyed this one up just for Mike. Like Mike is the king of this. Hey, Mike, I think we're going to do this. You interested in going? No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not gonna do that. Like, what are you talking about? Oh, here's the deal. We don't get to see my grandpa very often, right? Like, there's always like, I should call him more. We should go down and see him. We're like, boy, we just never do it. So I think we figured out that we can make a trip. We'll go see Herrick at the Voice of the Martyrs.
Right.
Come back, see my grandpa and stuff. And like, Mike hasn't seen grandpa for a long time either. So I'm like, hey, Mike, hey, we're gonna try to go down and hook up, and see grandpa over like a Friday, Saturday. Like, it's gonna be a 2 days, you know, everything. And Mike goes, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. No, I'm not gonna make that.
That is so much better than the alternative, though.
I know, right?
It is so much better than the alternative. So many people are socially afraid. Okay, so we make fun of Mike quite a bit for being a socially awkward dude and not knowing how to have conversations. If you put him in a Panera Bread and then put him in front of the bread dude that asks him what kind of bread do you want, Mike is not good in that situation. But if you say to him, hey, man, we're going to go on a two-day trip down to Oklahoma and then up and see Grandpa, he's great in that situation where he go, yeah, that sounds awesome. But no.
No, I'm not.
There's no way I'm going to make that. I can't swing that. I'm not even going to lie to you about the fact that I'm going to make it. I'm not even going to pretend like I owe you a, well, maybe.
I'm
just going to flat out tell you, no, that sounds great, but no.
Here's the deal. It's like, and it's one of those things where, and I don't say this very often, but like, I wish I handled things better than Mike. What I would be prone to do is be like, I'm not sure if I can do that or not. And then I'd go home and casually mention it to my wife and expect her to say, yeah, you should go. That way I didn't have to say, I want to go and have her reject it because I took the irresponsible time away from my family. So I'm like, hey, yeah, the guys were talking about going out to this.
What are your thoughts on that?
And then my own wife has to say things like, didn't we say we were going to do this, or you, the kid, I'm supposed to be doing this so the kids are going to be with you, blah, blah, blah. And then I have to make my wife make the decision to let me out of my own family responsibilities because I'm a pansy.
Here's the serious situation, right? So this last 6 months to a year has been a weird part in Boova life, because I've kind of had to go from the thought process of, man, I can't wait to find a lady that's going to fix all this stuff for me. it's going to make me a really good dude someday. Because we're just going to counteract each other, and then that's how marriage works. Yay! And then within the last 6 months to a year, I've watched people, and I've kind of been shut down in that situation of, Boova, that makes absolutely no sense. That is how a divorce happens, to where you have brought yourself into a situation where you have said, hey, lady, I've got like 50% of a dude. Can you get the other 50% for me and make that work? I'm totally running the situation. And so that's what I'm afraid of doing, is like, I need to find myself in a place where I fix this stuff before I get in a marriage, before I go to a lady and go, hey, here's half a man. You're a whole lady.
Can you also loan me a half a man?
Can you loan me half a Boova?
Because
I spent years, like, doing the dishes. I realized, like, 3 weeks ago that I do not do the dishes on a daily, weekly, or biweekly situation, to where I have had to make the decision more than 5 times in my life, do I do the dishes or do I throw them away and buy new ones? That is ridiculous.
Like not paper plates
right.
or anything, right?
No, I'm talking like I have glass dishes that I've thrown away, and I'm just like, meh. You know, it's not really worth it. Like, I have Tupperware upon Tupperware that I have like 8,000 lids, but then I don't have the bowls because I just threw them away after a while. It's little stuff like this where I'm just like, man, I really need to figure this whole deal out before I ask a lady, hey,
you want in?
My marriage proposal is going to be like, are you sure?
You have dishes?
Do you by chance do the dishes and or laundry once or twice a week?
Can I have?
Because that's what I'm looking for.
Can I have my rib back?
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to be the good time dude that's just really good at having fun, but then is terrible at it being a man. And I think that's the situation we're running to with a lot of people that are willing to be the good luck or the good happy person, where they'll say, yes, I'll do this and absolutely I'll be there, but then don't have the stones to back up the situation where they can go, no, I can't be there, or if I say I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there.
No, and there's also like some of it, again, is there's some attempts at altruism here. Like, you want to promise to be able to help. People's like, hey, can you help me do this? Can you help me do this? Can you help me do this? And like, you want to say yes to all these people. But the truth is, you can't do it.
Right.
Yeah. You can't agree to all that stuff. And you're not being helpful if you're actually not doing the thing that they asked to
right.
do. You've just inconvenienced yourself, caused them to feel guilty for having bothered a busy man who can't get the stuff done that he said he would do. You're not actually, you think you're being helpful, but you're not. I've run into that before. I have like a very, I'm not great at anything, but I'm pretty good at a lot of things. And so like, but there's like wide different ranges of people asking for help. Hey, I want to record a tune. Can you edit this video? Can you, you know, the judge a poetry contest? Like all kinds of weird stuff. And like, and so I'll say yes to things, and then I'll be like, I'm not going to make that. I'm going to get that in time. And then maybe I'll get it done, but I'll get something done 3 or 4 days late. And I thought, my yes wasn't a yes, right?
Yeah.
Like, I could have just said, look, I can't do this. You know, maybe if I had a month, or like if I was honest at least about a time frame, but like, don't say yes if I can't say yes honestly, or at least, you know, if there's a caveat to it, provide the caveat. Just be honest with people.
Right. you know, it's kind of a two-way or a two-sided deal, because there's an altruistic perspective to that, if I want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing for everybody. But there's also a pride deal to that, too.
Yeah.
Where a lot of people are from, look at it from, well, I mean, like a worship pastor walks up to me and says, hey, can you do backup singing on Sunday? My pride goes, well, I mean, probably, yeah. I could definitely do that. Like, I can sing some bars for a little bit. But then I look at it from the perspective, hey, God's got a lot of people. Like, he knows a lot of people, and probably a lot more people that can sing than I can. And so my altruism, which is really pride, yeah, is saying, you know, yeah, I could totally be a singer because you need one. Or I could just go, no, you don't want me to be your singer.
Wrong guy.
I can stand there if you want me to, and I'm, ooh, yeah. Like, no, it's terrible. Right? Like, it's awful. You find someone else, and you're doing someone a better service by going, I probably could do that, but there's definite possibility that God's got someone who's a lot better at that than I am.
Yeah.
Go find that person.
I feel like if you are willing to embrace the social awkwardness, your life will eventually get better for you.
Except for the Panera Bread.
Yeah. Well, except for, I mean, it does come with bags that you can't get rid of. Like when you're dealing with regular people, they're like, do you want a receipt? And I say, why?
And rather than just,
instead of no thank you, I'm like, what for? And then we stare at each other for a couple seconds, and I just turn around and leave, because I don't know how to handle that situation.
What kind of bread are you looking for? I have no idea.
It is embarrassing.
We love you, Mike. All right, what's secular have to say about this one, man?
Long story short on the telling the truth thing is, like, your bolstered explanations on why you can't do something are completely not necessary. If you can embrace the social awkwardness of just saying, hey, we're having a party, can you go? Nah. Then that's it. That's it.
You don't try to make up a story,
or you don't try to make up this whole deal, or whatever. Just say, nah, I can't make that, and then just leave it go. And, like, you'll get used to it after a while.
Here's the deal. There is freedom in that integrity.
Yeah.
There's freedom in just being honest with people, like, hey, this is what it is. No, I ain't coming.
Okay.
Why aren't you coming? I'm not going to make it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Just doesn't sound.
I'm a home offender.
Something about your personality in general just makes me not want to come to your place. I mean, whoops. Dang it. Segular says, I assume that you have already expressed your frustration to at least some of the people you have prescribed. If this happens regularly, it's a sign that they don't care how their behavior affects you. You can spare yourself much stress if you start deleting irresponsible, self-centered individuals from your circle to the extent that it's possible. Of course, you can't do that with those who have control over your life, such as professors or employers right now, so you have to tolerate some of this behavior for the present.
Yeah, when people don't live up to your standards, you should abandon them.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right, now try and help them out of that situation.
No. 100%. Yeah. I think I don't want you getting into that on me.
Giving up on me, fellas? Like, I really appreciate it.
That's terrible advice. I mean, I get it, but, you know. Hey, here's the thing is, like, I would say, and Booba, I guess I can. Coming from your perspective or mine, I have some of this in me too, is I don't think of it that way.
Right.
I don't think that I'm treating people poorly. Like I've really reacted selfishly.
Right.
I just don't recognize that I've been that way. And I do actually sometimes need someone to reorient and say, look, you shouldn't volunteer for that.
Yeah, a lot of times people just want to make you happy.
Yeah.
And just go, yeah, that sounds great. They're not thinking, oh, how can I foil their plans by not showing up? Like, it doesn't have to be some weird, like, devious plan to say yes to something and then not show up.
Yeah. It's true that they may not care about you, but they're not thinking of it that way.
Right. They're looking at it, they want to make you happy here, and then that's it.
And here's how communication works. They don't know that because you didn't say it. Why don't you share it with them?
Hey, Booba, remember that one time you told me you were going to do something and you completely didn't? Yeah. That was awful. That's all we need to hear.
Ready for one more?
Yeah, one more.
This actually falls into pretty close to the same category of the conversation we were talking about earlier.
Excellent.
I know I have an issue with alcohol.
Yep.
Hold on. Dear Life from the Path. Okay. I know I have an issue with alcohol. I've read about local AA groups, but they don't seem right for me because I'm an atheist. When I went to my doctor, along with my supportive husband, she had no suggestions to offer. I know I need help beyond what friends and family can provide. Do you have any ideas for me? Here's my answer, though. No. I don't, right? Because, like, there are programs that are pretty helpful, but, like, I don't know how to counsel people outside of Jesus. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, here's my specific problem, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, do you know Jesus?
Right.
And I don't know counseling. I just know the King.
How do you say life's going to get better if you quit this, if you don't bring him to Jesus?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, let's say you're not an alcoholic and still an atheist. You didn't solve anything as far as I'm concerned. And so, like, I only know how to say, okay, we can try to find you some help. But let's talk about something first.
First off, what I'll say is AA does not necessarily cater just to religion. AA does a pretty good job of just giving some good tips.
Don't they just call it like the higher
power?
Yeah,
they say higher power. I've been to AA meetings. They say higher power or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Depending on who the counselor is that gives it, they'll go like, you know, submit to your higher power, or you know, if there isn't one, you know, just make certain that you're doing something that's going to make what's this doing for your family? What's this doing for people around you? That has nothing to do with Jesus in that perspective. It's just, hey, you're an alcoholic. You're hurting your family and people around you.
And yourself.
Yeah, and yourself. And so AA will work perfectly fine for you if you are an atheist, first off. But second off, I kind of find myself in Mike's camp, too, where I'm just like, yeah, you can get yourself to not be an alcoholic, but then, like, I still don't see 20 years down the line how you're not going to go, man, drinking was pretty sweet. I remember when that happened. And, like, when I was in rough times, that bottle of booze was awesome. And if there's no Jesus to supplement that bottle of booze, I really don't know how it works, because I've seen it fail on so many occasions.
See, that's the thing.
That's
where
I come from.
When we say stuff like this, it sounds like we're going to do it in an ultra-cheesy way, like, hey, I'm an alcoholic. Well, do you know Jesus? You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't do it like that. Like, you have to love people where they're at, and, like, them, whatever they're struggling with, right, is, like, you have to love them to the point that you're willing to understand that and walk through it with them. And when I say walk through it with them, that's what I mean. You know what I'm saying? Not preaching from the bleachers or whatever. Like, you got to walk through it with them, and it takes some energy. And, like, I can only get the energy to do that kind of stuff when Jesus helped me, right? Like, it turns out that, like, I have a hard time relating with people. I have a hard time loving people to the extent that Jesus prescribes for them. And I can't show any of that without his help. But, like, in the long run, I had a guy that I was dealing with that he had some drug use in his past. And he was kind of straightening himself up. And he got a job. And he would call me all the time. And he's like, yeah, I'm doing good. Or, you know, I'm getting better at the job. And they're going to promote me and stuff. And, like, all I could think of was, like, I really want to be happy for you, right? But, like, you still don't know Jesus. And, like, I don't know. I don't measure things like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm really happy for you, and I love that you're happy. But this is going to be temporary for you. And it was. It was absolutely temporary for him. It did not stick, and it did not stay until he met Jesus. And then it did start to stick, and it did start to stay. And so, like, don't – how can I say this? So you have to love people – you have to love people where they're at and walk with them, and they will sooner or later want to know why you're still there. And when you can say, like, I am here because I am loved by Jesus, and I really want you to know him, and you can't shake me until you've at least given me a shot to explain this kingdom to you. And like, I feel like you can do that in a genuine way, and it's hard to prescribe to make it not sound disingenuous, but, like, you can love people in a genuine way, and just by who you are and who you follow, it will become very obvious why you are still there.
If you love people in a genuine and confusing way, I think that's such a wonderful way. And I don't mean confusing from the perspective for you. I mean confusing for them. You know, I've dealt with some of those situations too, with, you know, people that I love very much that are going through either drug abuse or alcohol addiction and stuff like that, or addiction of many other kinds.
Sure.
If I would have just walked up to them and said, hey, yeah, we both acknowledge that you're in a pretty cruddy place right now. Let's talk directly about Jesus and only Jesus. Like, I'm not really going to get a lot of feedback from them, and I'm not going to get a lot of, well, now that you mentioned his name, he sounds great. Let's
right.
go ahead
this
and start
sounds
with
great.
Us.
Goodbye, yeah. whiskey.
Jesus seems like a cool name. Like, I think I'll go for that guy. It's from the perspective of when they crash, when they are surrounded by their addiction, surrounded by the problems of their addiction, and then cannot see anything else, and you're standing there with your hand open just saying, hey, no matter what you're dealing with right now, I love you entirely. And they go, why?
What's wrong with
you? And then you get to go, Jesus. And then they go, okay, now his name sounds even cooler. Let's talk about him.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the difference. Like somehow the our even broad thought about introducing people to Jesus ended up, when do I get to have the conversation that they want to have, right? But, like, you know, we were talking about being ambassadors for the good news of the gospel. That thing was an action,
right?
Like you're doing something. It's not a cognizant assent. It's not a creed that you're otherwise agreeing to. Like, there's a reason where God could have shouted his redemption of the world down for the heavens, and it would have been sufficient. There's something about sending Jesus Christ, an active someone interacting with the world, demonstrating through hands and feet, and otherwise encouraging as we go. Like, it feels like something. And the truth is, like, sometimes when we're saying, hey, I just want to be able to talk to him about Jesus, like, that's what your behavior is doing. Like, you're demonstrating something that says, I need something that describes this behavior. All you're doing is putting a definition on it and saying, you want to understand what this is. This has been Jesus. This is good news. Like, and not only because, hey, your life's improving. That's not the point. The point is that there is a love that exists in the world that from which this type of thing happens. And
people are drawn to that type of hope and the good news that comes with a kingdom which pours that out into existence. And so, like that's the thing, is we just need to understand those things differently. That walking alongside someone, that those are feet that bring good news. Now, they right. It will get articulated as Jesus, but like it's not a failure because you haven't been able to have a verbal conversation, right? Like it's part of the process. It's part of the nature of why. Part of how Jesus talks to our calls to righteousness looks like what we do. Like, it's why it matters what you do. I you're saved by grace through faith so that no one can boast, but for good works that I plan for you. Like, he's got stuff for you to do. And that's, it's one of the things that kids and I pray for every night. Is like, help us to love people so that they may know how much you love them by how much we love them. And that's still part of that process. So, like, what we need to be careful of is that, like, it doesn't feel like that's a fail. It's not a fail. It's a natural outpouring of loving people, and then that, frankly, the Jesus becomes the definition of the way in which they understand such a thing.
I feel like I can't ever say anything as well pointed as you. Like, me and Boova get on, we're like, blah blah blah, drug use, heroin, and brooms, and then you say the right thing, and then me and Boova have to be quiet for another couple of minutes.
I felt that way for a long time.
Fair enough. Here we go. Secular says, I certainly, the question was, do you have any ideas for me? Secular said, I certainly do, because there are secular alternatives to AA. And then she lists them. Congratulations.
Well, hey, from a secular perspective, she answered the question.
Now, hold a minute. Did this person wrote into the paper, right? Like, does Google not exist in their place? I feel like this is easily Googleable.
Here's the deal. I really don't know how this mode of communication still exists. Like, I really don't know how people are doing the whole, hey, is it all right if I bring over some pot roast to my friend's house? Like, I really don't get how that's not working. Because we have Facebook.
Right.
We have Twitter. We have social media in its vastness. And then we have Google.
Hey, but like, this is like someone who says, hey, I'm struggling with alcohol addiction, and I don't want to go to AA. I'm going to write into the newspaper and get my answer in 6 weeks if they decide to read my letter. I mean, that sounds like, hey, I want to keep drinking.
Have you reached out for help? Well, I did send a letter to the news. I walked to the ocean with a bottle and then a note in the bottle, and I threw it, and I'm really hoping it makes it to the police.
I also, and here's the wrong thing that popped in my mind, which was, it said, I don't want to go to AA. And I thought, like, you don't seem to have, you've got this drinking thing wrong. Maybe you're not right about Jesus either.
Like, yeah, right. I mean, see, by comparison, I've made a track record of bad decisions. That's frankly how Jesus becomes more enlightened to me, right?
Yeah.
It's like you start to follow him around, you're like, boy, I've really made some bad calls. I feel like the Lord's got
this. Really working this out.
And the more I do stuff, I'm like, you mean give money away? That sounded so foolish a couple years ago. I feel like I should keep it and use it for stuff that I want.
But that'd be impossible, Jesus. Thanks.
All right, you've been listening to Life from the Path. I'm sorry, if you've recently written into the newspaper for advice, I feel like pseudo-apologize.
Check the Google.
What we said about you.
Real quick.
Hey, just shoot us a direct email, info@livefromthepath.org. You might as well skip the middle, man. We can take care of the advice directly. So that's if you have any feedback on the show, good or bad, just put it in the subject line. If it's good, so I'll read it. If it's not good, we'll get to that at some point or other. Big thanks to Wayne Stewart for dropping by. Make sure you go check out When Totems Fall. Again, that's whentotemsfall.wordpress.com. You can get the pre-order on the paperback book, also through Amazon. Hey, man, it's real easy. Go hit up Amazon. Just do a search for When Totems Fall. You can order that, and it will deliver it to you automatically when it's released. Send us the 21st. That would be Tuesday. Be coming out next Tuesday would be the release.
Well, would it get there on the Tuesday or the Prime?
Yeah, man, that's digital goods, man. They'll available it on the Tuesday.
Okay, hey, man, cool. You should Google that. Figure out how long.
Yeah,
it takes.
I'm sorry, I interrupted the show with a standard question I could have taken care of later.
And make sure, like I said, make sure you engage in that art, man. Go do a search for When Totems Fall on Facebook. There's a page out there where you can kind of interact. Leave your thoughts. Wayne checks it. It says on the left hand side that he's very responsive to messages, and I expect this behavior to continue, Wayne.
Indeed.
If you let your Facebook be a yes. And anyway, Wayne, big thanks for coming in. Congratulations on the book. Make sure you check that out next week. Hey, we're not going to go to Bash. So I remember the last few shows, I said we were going to be Bash on the Farm. We had some technical stuff that's not going to work out. So we'll plan on that next year, see if we can swing out there. In the meantime, though, there's some serious, serious sweet acts out there. Light 45 is going to be there. I've been digging on there. So
you got to give these dudes a spin now. They the one of the songs that I took a listen to was called Steeped, from them. Man, it's good. It's good. It's got the slide guitar action. It's really, the kids love it. It's a good tune.
Yeah.
I can't pass a lot of these crazy tunes off on my wife and kids because they go, eh, and then they turn something else on when I leave the car.
Yeah.
But this one they'll play in the full entirety of the fam. So it's if you check out Light 45, they have a Facebook page and they got a website.
I think those boys are up and from Minnesota, and I think they're coming on the show maybe in a couple months if they can find a way to get down here and hit us up on a Monday night. So anyway, go check that out. Thanks for hanging out with us on Life in the Path. Please be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends, and you've been listening to Life from the Path.